From the Melanina Zuckerman College of Public Health at the University of Arizona, this is Keeping Up with Public Health, Pandemic Response Edition. I am Eric Healy, and my co-host is Caitlin Meyer-Krause. In this episode, we speak with Dr. Kelly Reynolds and Dr. Jonathan Sexton. Dr. Reynolds is professor and chair of the Department of Community Environment Health Policy, Program Director of Environmental Health Sciences at the Zuckerman College of Public Health, and Director of the Environment, Exposure Science, and Risk Assessment Center. Dr. Sexton is a laboratory manager and researcher at the University of Arizona, who studies and evaluates the applied use of disinfectants and sanitizers on porous and non-porous surfaces in the healthcare arena. Dr. Reynolds, Dr. Sexton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I guess the first question that we have is, can you describe what the current research says about how long SARS-CoV-2 survives on various surfaces, and why is it important to know this information?
So there's a lot of mixed information about how long the CoV-2 survives on different types of surfaces, and part of that is because viruses will survive differently based on temperature and humidity and the type of surface that it's deposited on, and even what kind of media it's deposited in, say if it's by itself or if it's within mucus or saliva or even feces. So there's a wide range of data out there for this particular virus. And really the longest that I've seen research show that SARS-CoV-1 survives in feces was up to 9 days. But what we're finding with a lot of the research with SARS-CoV-2 is that the way it's primarily transmitted, which is large droplet aerosols, when it settles on surfaces, it survives primarily between hours, but up to days, up to maybe 2 days, depending on the type of surface. So we've seen reports that on cardboard, the virus could survive 1 to 2 days, but that's really in a much more controlled laboratory setting. If we really think about how packages might be going through the system in terms of packaging and delivery and maybe even sitting outside in the sun for a period of time before the person, the recipient actually gets the package, most likely by the time you handle a package, the virus, if it was on the package, would not survive. So SARS-CoV-2 is an envelope virus, which means that it has an outside protein lipid coat that doesn't survive very well once it dries out. So the quicker you can dry the virus out, the more rapid it will essentially not be viable to cause infections.
Talking about SARS-CoV-2 being airborne, how worried should we be about catching COVID-19 through the air? I know a recent study that came out discusses safe distances when being outside, which up to now people have been encouraged to be out walking, running, and riding bikes. What are your thoughts on being outside?
Yeah, I think with catching it in the air, yeah, like you just said, the most important thing is space and distance. So don't be right next to each other. Just keep that distance, especially. And if you're outside, I think you're at a lower risk of contracting it because, like we talked about earlier, sunlight, UV light, it's going to dry out, but you still want to maintain at least 6 feet if possible.
And I've seen some reports too, anecdotally, like I said, we're learning so much still about this virus in particular, but I've seen reports where even 12, 15, and up to 25 feet have been documented where the aerosols can be transmitted from person to person. So although that's probably very rare, we think the primary transmission is through large droplets, which will settle very quickly and probably won't be transmitted beyond 6 feet. But it's possible that during certain procedures, especially in a healthcare environment, that the virus could be aerosolized from patients and spread even further. So I think right now the best practices as reasonably far as possible that you can stay away from other people, especially anybody that might be exhibiting symptoms, it's a good idea as a best practice to put as much distance between you and other people as possible right now.
Thanks. So I know the CDC recently changed their recommendations on wearing face masks for the general public. Can you touch on why that change was made and the benefits and risks of wearing a homemade mask?
So the CDC did change their recommendation about the general population wearing face masks, but I think there's a big misunderstanding in terms of what the CDC's position still is. And the CDC is still maintaining that wearing a personal face mask for the general public is really to protect other people in case you're an asymptomatic carrier of the virus, which we're seeing in some populations, and therefore you won't be transmitting aerosols as or droplets as readily as if you didn't have a mask on at all. But I think the general population is looking for some comfort in wearing a homemade face mask to prevent their own exposure. And that's really not where we think the face masks are going to be the most effective. And certainly we know that if the virus is spread through droplets and aerosols, if it's blocked by a face mask you're wearing, your eyes are still vulnerable. So you still have a mucous membrane exposed. So the best course of action is, if you're worried about coming into contact with somebody that has the virus, is to really stay home, to isolate as much as possible. And if you do have to go out, wearing the face mask is really advised to protect other people that you might expose.
And it's also important to remember that not all face masks are created equal. So, I mean, people are making them out of vacuum filters, out of cloth, out of just material. I mean, I've seen people wearing gas masks, which really doesn't protect against viruses. So, and if you need to make sure you wear it properly, beards are a little harder to wear some of this stuff with. It kind of lets in some of those aerosols. So, and they're not always as effective as we think.
And so do you think that the general public wearing a homemade cloth mask is more for comfort? Well, and the CDC says to prevent possible spread from asymptomatic people. But with such a shortage in PPE, people making these cloth masks for people who are always in close contact in healthcare facilities, are there dangers that are associated with wearing those? Or are we at a point that just anything we can get is better than nothing?
I think just one of the dangers of wearing them is the false sense of security. And so they might become lax or whatnot, be like, I have my face mask. So like even wearing the face mask, I think it's a good idea, but we also need to keep reiterating the washing the hands, the properly wearing your PPE and that kind of stuff. So people don't just think this is the one magic bullet.
And you bring up a good point, properly wearing the PPE with something like a cloth mask. The N95s and the KN95s and the surgical masks were designed for or intended for single use, one-time use. You're finished with the patient, goes in the garbage. But with these cloth masks, they will need to be sanitized somehow. Do you have any recommendations for people who are wearing these masks to minimize cross-contamination, to be able to sanitize them effectively?
Yeah, I think if you're able to use it, just wear it one time, I think that's good. But yeah, otherwise, if you are going to be doing repeatedly wearing it, you'll want to throw it in the washer or at least use just one mask per day or whatnot. So I mean, if it's in the washer, you want to use the hot water cycle. You want to put it in the dryer on the highest setting to help make sure that you kill anything that's in there.
Yeah, and I agree with Jonathan that, you know, your washing machine cycle should be fine if you wash and dry your face masks, and that they should be changed very frequently, maybe even after every single use, not even just throughout an entire day, but changing every time you need to remove the mask to eat, then it should be removed and thrown into the laundry. So that means you will need multiple masks to get you through the day before you can have a chance to launder them. But we definitely know that we've observed people that when they take off the mask, or if they want to remove the mask, maybe just to talk to somebody temporarily or to eat something or even smoke a cigarette, we're seeing people grab the mask front with their hand and just pull it down under the chin and then continue on with some other activity and then pull it back up. And that's exactly what we're telling people we don't want you to do, because at that point, if you have concentrated virus on the outside of the mask, you've just now contaminated your hand. And by moving the mask up and down, you know, you're creating a cross-contamination potential that could be a much higher exposure than if you never wore the mask in the first place.
And along those lines, even if you are reusing it and taking it off even just for a minute or so, you want to remember which side you had that was on your mouth as opposed to the outside, because you don't want to just flip it around and then it was pointless for you to wear that mask because you're just breathing it in then.
I agree. And then this brings up another personal protective equipment device, gloves. Do you have any thoughts on gloves?
Yeah, so I think with gloves, they're great. I like seeing some people wearing gloves, but yeah, how to wear them properly, how to take them off, how to put them on. But the one thing that drives me insane is when someone will leave their house, put on gloves, and they'll go run multiple errands, and then they won't take the gloves off until they get home. So they were just bringing in contaminants, potential contaminants from every environment into their house, into their car. So I would almost say if you are going to wear gloves, it should be one pair of gloves per like errand. So if you go to the grocery store and you're wearing gloves, don't go to the grocery store with gloves and then go to the bank. Have different gloves for the store versus the bank. And then avoid contacting some of your own personal supplies. So you might be readjusting your glasses with that, but once you get home, you're gonna touch your glasses again, but you're not gonna have a glove on. Same thing with items in your purse or your wallet. So be more cognizant of what you're touching when you have those on, so you don't have that false sense of security.
What about with gloves? I've read some articles where people are wearing, you know, working maybe at grocery stores or in other settings and wearing the same gloves all day. So they're not taking the time to wash their hands. Do you have any comments on that?
That's really a big problem. Washing hands is the best defense you have for getting viruses away from you and being exposed to them. So hand washing is a primary defense. If you're wearing gloves, you likely aren't washing your hands. So you've just removed that primary defense as one of your options. And I've had people ask me, well, what if I wash my gloves and continue to wear the gloves? And disposable gloves were not meant to be washed. And if you're putting hand sanitizer on the glove or washing them like you would with your hands using soap and water, basically you're creating a big potential for creating micro tears into those gloves that can be entry points for the virus to your skin anyway. So it's a real false sense of security that these gloves are protecting you at all. And in fact, it may be putting you at more risk. Your hands were designed to be washed frequently. Your skin can handle that. A glove will create micro tears, and they're just not designed to work in that way. So you're really increasing your potential for exposure if you wear gloves throughout the day and don't wash your hands properly.
And then also kind of along the lines of what I said with the face mask, not all gloves are created equal. We have some latex glove, nitrile gloves. They're all designed to protect you against different things. Some people wear the cloth gloves, so those are going to be needed to change more frequently and washed and all that. So got to want to consider the type of glove you're using.
And also, I think a valuable point to touch upon, and we've talked about this with cross-contamination, is you can't really be infected with the virus by the virus touching your hand. The virus has to come into contact with mucous membranes. So whether you're wearing gloves or not, if you touch, you know, gloves to your face, it's the same as if you weren't wearing gloves at all. And I mean, the gloves themselves don't protect you. They're kind of a barrier. Can you discuss any common misconceptions about glove etiquette in cross-contamination?
So I guess in terms of etiquette, I mean, we talked about how people are wearing and using the gloves for long periods of time in ways that they weren't designed for, but maybe we want to talk a little bit about how the gloves are removed. So when the gloves, you know, we do recommend wearing gloves if you're caring for a patient who's sick with COVID-19 so that you can, you know, do focused activities, maybe collecting their laundry or cleaning up any mucus or any other kind of bodily fluids. It's a good idea at that point to wear gloves for high risk potentials for exposure. But then when you're taking the gloves off, you need to be very careful about not contaminating other surfaces where the gloves might be heavily soiled. So we recommend, and the CDC has great pictures, infographics, and videos on how to properly doff the gloves or take the gloves off. And essentially you need to, with your gloved hand, grab the outside of the other hand's contaminated glove and pull it off and turn it inside out as you're pulling your hand out. And then you can take that inside out glove that now you can touch that because it's clean, and you can use that to take off the second glove and turning it inside out as well, and then disposing of the glove. So being very, very careful that that contaminated side of the glove doesn't touch anything else.
And part of that is your disposal of it, is you shouldn't throw it because you can spread any virus or any contaminants along the pathway. And I'm sure, like, we've all seen some of the scenes outside grocery stores where people are just throwing their gloves on the ground. Well, someone has to pick that up so they could potentially be exposed. So you want to make sure that you throw those away in a trash can. That way you might be protecting yourself, but you're putting others at risk. So we want to avoid that.
So moving on to surfaces and the worry about, you know, going to the grocery store, some articles are saying, you know, don't really worry about it. Somebody would have had to sneeze directly on it before you touch it and bring it into your house. Others are saying we need to sanitize everything from mail, packages, groceries. Can you all comment on that?
Yeah, I do like how the grocery stores are all sanitizing all the baskets. And I think that's a great idea, because just imagine how many people touch those baskets throughout the day. And as we mentioned, it can survive for minutes to hours on some of these surfaces. So it is good to practice surface disinfection. But then also along some of those lines that we were talking about with the packages, they're going to be outside. Your mail might take a while for you to get it. So I'm not as concerned about some of those surfaces as I am with high touch services in the public.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think, you know, if you're bringing home groceries and you put them in the refrigerator, or you leave them sit out on the counter, that if there was a chance for some minor level of contamination, then the virus should die off pretty quickly. If you are concerned, you can use a disinfecting wipe to wipe down some of these grocery products as you're bringing them into the house. But I think the risk is extremely low for that to be a pathway of transmission. There would have to be so many different steps in place before it gets to you. You know, there has to be a contaminated shopper that, or an infected shopper that contaminates the product that you end up purchasing. And there's some period of time between those two things occurring where there's a die-off rate that will occur for the virus. And then the transport time for you to bring it home and bring it into your home and put the groceries away, by that time, if there were viruses present, many of them would die off. So we'd be expecting low levels of contamination, even potential, and then low risk through that chain of events and its survival.
And this brings up another point that would be interesting to discuss. With all the shortages of things that are labeled disinfectants in stores, some chemicals are known or are approved for fighting SARS-CoV-2 and some are not. How would a public health worker or even an individual know that their efforts are actually disinfecting the way that is recommended? What chemicals are approved?
Yeah, I think you need to just look at the list that says what they're approved for on the back. There's a label that says what it can kill. You can also go to their websites, EPA, CDC's websites, and they have lists of what's approved for disinfecting the virus. But then also, even if it's not killing it, and my thoughts are if you're gonna spray down the surface, you're also gonna wipe it down. So while you might not be killing all the virus there, you're hopefully removing at least some of it when you're wiping it down. So I mean, any kind of cleaner I think is better than nothing if you're not able to get a hold of one that is approved for disinfection of it.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that if you are experiencing a shortage of actual disinfecting wipes and you need to go to just soap and water for physical removal, as Jonathan just described, that you make sure to change out your cleaning tool rapidly or frequently. So use disposable paper towels where possible instead of, say, reusing a sponge. If you're using a sponge or a cloth rag, then after every cleaning activity, you should throw that in the washing machine and wash it. Or you can even put your sponge in the microwave for 30 seconds. Make sure it's wet so it doesn't catch fire. And that can help to sanitize the sponge or the cleaning cloth that you might be using. But the best practice would be to use disposable paper towels when you're cleaning so that you're not spreading more contamination throughout your home from dirty rags and sponges.
Along those same lines, there are some public health programs that are essential and are still working. People, you know, some individuals are going into others' homes. What cautions can they take and what can they do to protect themselves and also those that they are working with?
I think a lot of it is kind of what we've already been talking about, is making sure that if they're able to social distance while performing that essential tool, that's really important. The use of face masks if you're in a high-risk environment, the use of gloves, and remembering to take them off in between patients or in between house visits and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think social distancing and hand washing, those are your two greatest defenses other than isolating yourself from those activities where possible. But if you're still an essential worker and you're going into people's homes and you need to continue working, then as Jonathan mentioned, you know, hand washing and staying your distance from people will be very helpful.
Thank you guys very much for your time, and thank you for all you do. And I look forward to working with you guys in the future.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for your time.